The GB Files, the ultimate Packers podcast with Nate Lundy.
Chris Licata is our guest. It's time to talk Packers. He's with ProFootballSpot.com. You find Chris on Twitter at Chris Licata PFS, and that's L-I-C-A-T-A. Chris, let's start here. Now that the preseason is completely in the rearview mirror, give me a grade on what you've seen out of Green Bay during the preseason.
I'd give him a solid B through the preseason. There's been a few questionable moves, but the ship looks to be sailing pretty smoothly as it is right now. As you know, they just recently released their former All-Pro guard, Josh Kitten, which is kind of a shock to most of Packers Nation, considering how well he's played in the past. Other than that, the Packers are looking strong, looking for a bounce back from Rodgers, as well as Eddie Lacy in the receiving corps, the return of Jordy Nelson. So they should be firing well on offense, and their defense is young and up and coming, and they're looking pretty underrated this season.
Looking at this team, Chris, you know, obviously the offense is what people tend to focus on, led by Aaron Rodgers, but you just brought up a couple of names there, Jordy Nelson and Eddie Lacy. Let's start with Jordy. You know, coming off of the injury, how has his recovery been? What's the expectations for him? Are they going to ease him into things, or, you know, is it going to be full steam ahead?
Well, you know, head coach Mike McCarthy just yesterday morning declared him a full go this week for their game in Jacksonville. So all signs are pointing toward him making a full recovery, full return. I think it's fair to expect him to take maybe a game or two to get back. But it seems like the general consensus around Nelson is that he'll be able to step right back in, put up those big numbers we're used to seeing just as shortly ago as 2014 when he's catching upwards of 90 balls and over 1,000 yards. So I think the Packers can expect a big boost on offense again this year.
And then obviously one of the things that, you know, they need to have or that they hope to have is Eddie Lacy back to, you know, the Eddie Lacy that we saw a couple of years ago. From what you have seen, you know, we know about his P90X, we know about the workouts, we know about all those kinds of things, but how is that actually translating to him on the field?
Well, he's definitely shed a few pounds, and you can see that just by looking at him this offseason. He's looked pretty good in the preseason, a little more limber than he did last year. We just need him to find those holes, hit those holes this year, make his cuts and get upfield quickly. The Packers' run blocking hasn't been a problem, so to speak, so I think it's fair to expect him to get back close to that 1,000-yard mark this year, especially if the passing game is firing on all cylinders, as we are expecting. But I think you can expect better numbers from Lacy this year going forward.
Speaking of Lacy, then, in that backfield, is it, you know, an entire workload on him, or are you seeing a bit of a running back by committee? What's your expectation in terms of kind of how the carries and the touches there in the backfield are going to break down?
Yeah, I do not think it's going to be a one-man wrecking crew with Lacy, so to speak. James Starks, as he proved last year, is more than capable of carrying the load. So I think maybe a 60-40 split is kind of what you're looking at in the backfield there. And Green Bay also recently claimed Jarrell Presley from the Vikings as a third down back. But most of the work's going to come through Lacy on the early downs, and expect Starks to see some work here and there on passing downs as well.
What about the tight end position? Richard Rodgers came onto the scene last year. We know that they also went out and got Jared Cook. The tight end position is certainly one that the Packers and Aaron Rodgers have leaned on before. What's the balance between those two guys, Cook and Rodgers?
Again, I think you're going to see somewhat of a 50-50 split, especially early on, until one of those guys proves that they can establish themselves. Jared Cook coming in brings a lot of athleticism and speed that the Packers haven't had at that position since the JaMichael Finley days a few years back. Although he does have some questions about his hands coming in, he's looked pretty well during the preseason. So I think what he's going to be able to do early on is open up some passing lanes in the middle of the field. And he's definitely more of a yards after the catch threat than Richard Rodgers has proved to be in the past. But the majority of the Packers' offense tends to come from their outside receiving game. I think having those two tight ends, though, will be a nice blanket for Rodgers under pressure this year.
Chris, let's switch over to the defensive side of things, and I want to go through positional groups a little bit and see, you know, where you're feeling good about the Packers and where maybe there are still some concerns. Let's start off with the secondary. Overall, when it comes to the corners, the safeties, that secondary that's there, how do you feel about what is there and even about what the depth is at that position if there's any kind of injuries that crop up?
Oh, this is definitely going to be the Packers' calling card for the next few years to come here. I think it's their strongest positional group. They have two very good young corners on the outside in Demaryius Randall and Quentin Rollins, who they picked in 2015 in the first and second round, as well as Sam Shields, who's their veteran there. They also have a dynamite pairing at safety in HaHa Clinton Dix and Morgan Burnett. So even the depth there is looking pretty good this season. They've actually, just this year, they've kept three undrafted free agents, which has been one of Ted Thompson's calling cards as well. So they're looking very deep at that position. I expect them to be the fuel that fires this defense this year.
When you look at the linebacking core, obviously folks are very familiar with Clay Matthews. You know what's going on with Peppers. Overall, in terms of that second level of the defense, we're aware of the names, but what about the depth that exists there? If they need to do some swaps, if somebody gets hurt, we know the injuries happen across the NFL. So what about the linebacking core, Chris?
So the Packers have formally moved Clay Matthews back to the outside there, which bodes well for their outside backers. There's a little bit of depth there, not as much as you see in the secondary, but they do have Nick Perry, Jaron Elliott, and third-round pick Kyler Fackrell to rely on there on the outside. On the inside, it gets a little more hairy. They actually only kept three pure inside linebackers this year, one of which was their fourth-round pick, Blake Martinez. It looks like he's going to be starting. But outside of him, Jake Ryan, and Joe Thomas, there's not much depth there on the inside. So you could look to see a few players playing a hybrid role in 2016.
All the way up on the front now, as we move from the secondary all the way up to that front defensive line, in terms of getting some pressure up the middle, trying to collapse the pocket, against the NFC North, against the likes of what will be Bradford and ultimately Jay Cutler, et cetera. What about that front defensive line, Chris?
That front three is definitely the most worrisome unit after they lost B.J. Raji this offseason. They scrambled to replace him with first-round pick Kenny Clark. But outside of that, they do have Mike Daniels, who's one of the finer interior linemen in the league. But between him and the rookie, there's not much else to go around there. You have a former player came over from the Vikings, LaTroy Guyon, seeing some time in nose tackle, as well as another rookie, Dean Lowry. But they're looking a little shaky up front. It wouldn't surprise me to see Ted Thompson make some kind of move, whether it's a trade for a veteran or signing an undrafted free agent of some sort to try and shore up the depth there. But they're looking pretty shaky up front as of right now.
So as you get ready for this opening weekend, the game against Jacksonville, we know that Jacksonville has made it their effort both in the draft as well as through free agency to kind of shore up their defense. So what are you going to be looking for in this week one matchup going up against Jacksonville?
Well, first and foremost, definitely going to be watching the Packers receiving core against that Jaguars young secondary. They spent their first-round pick on safety Jalen Ramsey. So that's an intriguing matchup to watch. I'd like to see if Randall Cobb can get back to his previous self in the slot role, which has been his calling card, so to speak. Outside of that, you want to see the Packers' offensive line, see if they can get a ground game going early on, get Lacy going. That's been something that Mike McCarthy has done historically, trying to get Lacy a few carries and establish the offense early on. But it looks to be a possible shootout in Jacksonville down in week one.
Chris Licata has been our guest talking Packers from ProFootballSpot.com. And you find Chris on Twitter at Chris Licata PFS. Chris, really appreciate the time this week. Thank you.
Thanks for having me, Nate.
Done talking Packers. Up next, we go around the NFL with the coach, Brian Billick. Stick around.
Around the league.
It is time for us to go around the NFL, and we do that every week here on the NFL Files with the coach, Brian Billick. You follow him on Twitter, at Coach Billick. He's brought to us by our friends at SeatGeek. Coach, we are here at week one, and as I was making my notes getting ready to chat this week, I realized that we are sitting on a whole lot of quarterback news. So let's start with the trade. Your thoughts on Sam Bradford going to Minnesota?
I think it's a great move. I think it mainly is an indicator that shows you just how good Minnesota thinks they are. A lot of people coming in, including myself, thought they could be not only a playoff team as they were last year, but a Super Bowl contender. And I think Sam Bradford actually enhances that. It's tragic to lose Teddy Bridgewater the way they did, but they were still betting on Teddy Bridgewater to come a little bit. You know, he only had 14 touchdowns last year, and I think he was going to get there. I think Sam Bradford in this system, and I think that's an important part for his ability to turn around and hand the ball up to Adrian Peterson, make the big throws down the field, for them to play good defense. I think it's a great move for them.
And looking at what the Eagles then did, for some on the outside, Coach, it almost feels like the Eagles have said, okay, this is our season, maybe this isn't our season, but they're putting a lot of faith in Carson Wentz, who only took 39 snaps in the preseason. Are you surprised?
Not really. I am and I am, and I'm not, from the standpoint of anytime you take quarterback in the first round, you got to play that guy. I mean, otherwise I was up at Philadelphia's training camp, and they seemed fully committed to not playing Carson Wentz if that's the way it came down. Remember, Doug Peterson was one who came in 1999 with the Philadelphia Eagles for Andy Reid to basically be a placeholder for Donovan McNabb, and he did that. Now, that was a 5-11 football team, and Donovan McNabb eventually took over. I'm a little surprised that they went to Carson Wentz this early, although the opportunity to turn Sam Bradford. I was critical of Philadelphia when they signed Sam Bradford and wondered what they were doing, then moved up to get the first round. But for them to recoup a first-round pick for Sam Bradford, I think they've been brilliant.
Yeah, I think overall when you look at that story, it worked out well for the Eagles. I knew that Minnesota was sitting on some extra picks, but obviously getting a first-rounder back was a big deal. Now let's go down to Dallas, Coach, where Dak Prescott will have the reins because of the injury to Tony Romo. You've had a chance to see him in the preseason. We know that all around the Metroplex, they're basically ready to put him in the Hall of Fame. They love him so much. But what have you seen from Dak Prescott that you think is going to be successful for him, and what do you still have concerns about?
Well, I think that optimism is well warranted, but let's not slam dunk him into the Hall of Fame just yet, okay? I mean, this young man doesn't know what's going to hit him. I think the difference, too, when you go back and you look at quarterbacks that have started in rookie years, let's go back to a great case study in 2008 when Joe Flacco and Matt Ryan took over as starting quarterbacks day one. Dak Prescott, Joe Flacco went in because of injury. They did not plan on starting him, and they actually ended up starting him, went to the playoffs. He had a solid year, not a great year, over 60%, a little better than 1-1 touchdown to interception, not stellar numbers, but showed that he could handle it. The difference being is Baltimore had a great defense. They had an established running game. Dallas doesn't have those things. They may have the running game. Obviously, the offensive line is Ezekiel Elliott. It could be a huge plus for them. But that defense has to be a concern. I think more is going to be asked of Dak Prescott than was asked of Joe Flacco, than even was asked of a Matt Ryan back then. And when you look last year with Mariota and Jameis Winston, who had solid rookie years that indicate they're going to be good, solid pros, I don't think as much was asked of them as is going to be asked of Dak Prescott, because that defense is suspect.
You just brought up Mariota, and I was going to ask you about Tennessee and the idea that they want to run what they're calling exotic smash mouth when it comes to their offensive attack this year. The Titans are in a tough division, and yet I feel like they're making steps in the right direction. What are you expecting out of Tennessee and out of a second year of Mariota?
Well, I like Marcus Mariota. I think he and Jameis Winston showed that they can play in this league. Obviously, they've got to take the next step. That description of their offense fits Mike Mularkey. He goes back to his Pittsburgh Steelers day. He ultimately wants to be a smash-mouth running program. But obviously, when you have Marcus Mariota and some of the things he does, they're going to open it up a little bit. It really is all about Marcus Mariota and how much better he's going to get. Remember, they made the transformation to Mike Mularkey as the head coach because he was the offensive coordinator to develop Marcus Mariota. This happened to him in Jacksonville when he took over as the head coach to obviously expand on the resume of Blaine Gabbert, and it didn't happen. So, this is going to be a similar scenario. Tennessee and even Mike Mularkey, their fate's going to be tied to how much improvement, obviously, Marcus Mariota makes.
We're going around the NFL with the coach, Brian Billick. He's on Twitter, at Coach Billick. He's brought to us each week by our friends at SeatGeek. Coach, when you look at the Carolina Panthers, we know, first of all, it's always difficult to get back to the Super Bowl in back-to-back years, regardless of whether you win or lose. But how much of their success last year, going 15-1, can they duplicate this year?
Well, that's a tall task to think that you're going to go 15-1. But this is clearly, in my opinion, the best team in the NFC South. This could be one of the top two teams, maybe the top team, even personnel-wise, in the NFC. There's no reason to think that they can't get back there. Cam Newton, you know, there's no reason to think that he's not going to turn around and again have an MVP year. He's got the credentials. They're going to stay committed to the running game if they can stay healthy. To get Kelvin Benjamin back should be a huge plus. And the defense, the front seven in particular. Now, the secondary has gone through some change. And so those that want to look at that Carolina and say, gee, what's going to happen with Carolina this year? Are they going to have that Super Bowl losing jinx and not even get back to the playoffs? If they do have some difficulties, it's likely going to be in the secondary. They drafted their second-round pick. James Bradbury is going to start for them. They had enough losses in the secondary compared to last year's team that that's an area you're going to have to watch.
One of the teams that could threaten them in the NFC is Arizona. Obviously, health matters for all 32 teams, but when you have an older quarterback like a Carson Palmer, when you have Larry Fitzgerald, you obviously need them out on the field. But do you feel like Arizona is the best threat to the Panthers in the NFC?
Absolutely. They're a veteran team, and that staying healthy is true of every team. How good is Carolina going to be if they lose to Cam Newton? So you don't wish that on anybody. And so this is going to be a good football team. It's a veteran team. I know the preseason wasn't particularly dynamic, but nobody cares. You remember the Indianapolis Colts days and their heyday with Peyton Manning. They typically went 0-4. You know, the preseason was just not going to be important. So, I mean, it's important, don't get me wrong, but the final outcome, nobody really cares. Nobody pays attention to. I think Arizona has all the pieces in place. Yes, you got to keep Carson Palmer healthy. Can they indeed build on what was a record year for him? But most of all, I really like what they're doing in the running game. Bruce Arians, let's go back again to your Pittsburgh roots, much like the Mike Blark. He wants to run the ball, even though you got Larry Fitzgerald and Michael Floyd. They want to run the ball. If David Johnson stays healthy, this guy's pretty good now. I know Bill Belichick is saying, well, he's no Marshall Faulk. Okay, but he's not bad. This David Johnson is pretty good. They want to run the ball well. And if they can continue to build on that aspect of it, they're going to be right where they were last year.
You talk about how difficult it is to get back to the Super Bowl, win or lose, and Denver's going to try to do it with a seventh-round pick starting at quarterback. How exactly do they do the fans have confidence in the idea of trying to get back to the Super Bowl with such an unproven quarterback?
Well, you're still in the glow of the Super Bowl championship. They're going to raise that banner, and so, yeah, confidence is going to be high, and it should be. You're going to play great defense. You know, typically, you look at this, and you'd say, okay, they made the determination. We're going to play great defense. We're going to run the ball, and all our quarterback has to do is not throw 23 interceptions like our quarterbacks did last year. Now, I think there's a little bit more to that. The biggest part of that equation to me is, are they going to run the ball better? Because they desperately need to. We'll find out about Trevor Siemian. I think he's a placeholder for Paxton Lynch. Trevor Siemian, I think, could be a solid backup in this league. I followed him in his college career, which you see in the preseason. I don't see those qualities necessarily to say this is going to be a frontline championship caliber quarterback. I certainly could be wrong. And I think Dak Prescott, I think when they went out and drafted Dak Prescott and they let Brock Osweiler leave, that was your ultimate plan.
Last one for you, Coach. As you look at the Patriots, obviously they'll have the first 4 weeks without Tom Brady. They have a schedule that looks like, even with Garoppolo if, as a game manager, if he doesn't make mistakes, that 2-2 is pretty easy, maybe even 3-1. What are your expectations for the Patriots while they wait for Brady to come back?
Well, there's any number of reasons. With a better New York Jet team, with what looks to be an improving Miami Dolphins team, I think a Buffalo Bill team that could really explode onto the scene. But I've been burnt on this one too many times. I'm not picking against Bill Belichick. I usually say I'm not picking against Bill Belichick and Tom Brady. The fact that they still have they're still going to have 12 games when we're done to deal with whatever happens in the next couple of weeks. The strength for the New England Patriots, beyond the fact that they're the New England Patriots, is you keep talking about, okay, do you have to whittle down the game plan or do you have to change the game plan for Jimmy Garoppolo? Well, that's what they do. More so than any team in the league, they morph from 1 week to the next to whatever they have to be. They're the only team in the league that will literally throw the ball 50 times 1 week and run the ball 40 times the next. So they're obviously going, they're not just at the quarterback position, but the team is used to changing its dynamics in terms of what it wants to do from week to week. Clearly, that'll be the task for them with Garoppolo, you know, see what kind of control he has of the offense, play good defense. The schedule right now looks like, we don't know how these teams are really going to play out, but right now it looks pretty manageable. So I think they're going to be in good shape.
He's the coach, Brian Billick. You find him on Twitter, at Coach Billick. He's a part of our Around the NFL here on the NFL Files podcast every single week. It's brought to you by SeatGeek. Make sure you download the SeatGeek app. You're looking for concert tickets, sporting events, a great way for you to make sure you're paying the best possible price for the tickets that you buy. It's SeatGeek. Coach, we'll talk to you again next week. Thanks.
All right, sounds good.
We're going into overtime next with Chad Brown, former NFL linebacker. Stick around.
Overtime.
This week on Overtime, it is 15-year NFL vet Chad Brown spent time with the Steelers, with the Patriots, as well as the Seahawks. And so Chad joins us here on the NFL Files podcast. And Chad, a six-pack of questions for you. And we start here. Question number one, what's the worst part of the opening week as a player?
That your conditioning isn't at as high of a level as it will be later in the season, and you never really get your second wind during the course of the ball game.
So you're maybe not quite where you want to be, and so you start feeling it late in the game?
You know, you feel it early. Late in the season, you know, you go out there and you play, and somewhere, you know, halfway through the second quarter, you're breathing relaxed and you kind of get that second wind kind of feeling. The first week or two of the season, you are out there struggling. You've play the full preseason, you've done all the conditioning, it's just your body is just not ready for a full 60 minutes of NFL high-level regular season football.
Nice. All right, question number two in our six-pack. You spent some time here during training camp with Tennessee. What was that like?
It was an incredible experience, and to contrast that where I was last year I did an internship with the Seattle Seahawks, obviously one of the best teams, one of the best franchises in the NFL, versus this year with the Tennessee Titans coming off a 3-13 season, them really trying to build something. I think they will be able to build something good there, but a very different experience, one team that's already there, one team that's trying to be there. And then also maybe the best part of the entire experience was getting a chance to essentially shadow Dick LeBeau for an entire month. Dick LeBeau will be in his 58th year in the NFL this season. So to shadow a guy like that with that much NFL experience was literally a priceless experience. And as good of a coach as Dick LeBeau is, he's in the NFL Hall of Fame. He's an even better human being and a better person. I really enjoyed that experience and that time with him.
As you sit right now, Chad, removed from the game, what's the one thing you would go back and tell your NFL rookie self right now if you could do it?
Don't ride the highs and the lows. It's each season is a marathon, and if you are constantly riding the highs and the lows, you're going to wear yourself out emotionally. There's only so much emotion in the human body that you can tap into that reservoir during the course of the season. And to try to be as steady as you can during the course of the week and after the game and while you're watching film is going to allow you to keep as much as you have in the reserve for the game time when you actually need it. Young Chad, you know, always left the game either extremely happy or extremely sad. And come to find out when you watch the film on Monday, it wasn't as bad as you thought it was, nor was it as good as you thought it was. So just try to be steady, Eddie. Keep your emotions in check so you can tap into them when you actually need them on Sunday for those 3 hours.
Question number, let's see here. I'm on four here now for Chad Brown. He's on Twitter at ChadBrown94, part of Overtime here. Chad, your favorite quarterback that you ever got to sack, your favorite quarterback to hit?
Man, you know, I've been lucky enough to hit a lot of them. sacked Peyton Manning, strip sacked Peyton Manning, sacked Joe Montana. So that's probably the, you know, most iconic of the quarterbacks who I sacked. But, you know, if there was a quarterback who's played, you know, in the 15 years I was in the NFL, there's a strong chance I got to sack him. You know, if I were to choose just one, I probably would go with Joe Montana just because I consider him to be the greatest quarterback of all time. So what better prize than to get the greatest of all time?
Question number five, Chad, would you trade your college national championship at Colorado back in 1990 for a Super Bowl ring? It's a tough one, isn't it?
No. It's a very tough question, but I'll give the answer no. The NFL, while winning a Super Bowl, which I've never won, I'm sure is an amazing experience. To do the national championship in college is different just because NFL, you're a professional, and in college, you're an amateur. And so for a college athlete, you win that championship with guys who you spend all your time with. These are literally your brothers. It's not just your teammates like it is in the NFL. These are literally your brothers. My roommate was on the football team. I spent all my time with those guys. You know, so because of that bonding experience, because of who we are, even now later in life, you know, I will be at those guys' funerals. You know, I'll be there when their, you know, children or grandchildren are born. Because of those types of relationships, I think that makes the national championship in college sweeter than a Super Bowl championship would be.
Last one for you, Chad, in our six-pack of questions. Do you have a pick for who's going to win the Super Bowl this year?
You know, I do not. You know, I don't get into that. It's always fascinating to me, whether we're talking college football or pro football. You know, the folks who do that, and I respect those who give it a shot. There's just so much football to be played. So many wacky things can happen. You know, the Broncos won the Super Bowl last year, you know, with one of the worst offenses in Super Bowl winning history. There were points late in the season where it looked as if they might not even win their division. So, you know, so many things have to happen for it all to line up. So my guess would literally just be an absolute guess. You know what? But just for the sake of doing this, I'll go with the Seahawks on the NFC side, and I'll go with the Steelers on the AFC.
Very nice. There he is, Chad Brown. He's our guest for overtime this week on the NFL Files. He's on Twitter at ChadBrown94. Make sure you give him a follow. Chad, thanks.
Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
This has been a Sports Joe production. For more team-specific podcasts, visit sportsjoe.com.